I'm Haley Joe.
And I'm Coco.
And this is Peaches and Screams.
Episode 2, Satanic Panic.
Yes.
We just got done watching it.
For a second time. So it is a Fangoria movie.
2019. Horror comedy.
Horror comedy. Very, very funny.
Yeah, it did have a lot of humor. Wasn't super scary, but it did have
the gore, some creatures.
Maybe a little spooky, but not really scary. There weren't any real jump scenes or...
No. And even the gore wasn't too... It didn't go too far, I didn't think. Did you?
No, I thought the gore was...
It was pretty tame.
Yeah. It was good, though.
It was good, yeah. It's on... Where can you stream it?
Amazon Prime, if you have Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, Shudder.
It was directed by Chelsea Stardust, who also directed one of Hulu's Into the Dark films, All That We Destroy.
That's right, you did say that. And that movie, that one was the one that is the mom and the son? It's the Mother's Day one.
Yes, the mom is trying to find the perfect mate for her son, and then she's killing the ones that don't work out.
Well, he's killing the ones. That's the thing. He's a serial killer, pretty much. And she's just trying to keep him satisfied. So she's already got, good in my book. One movie.
Yeah. That was a good one.
What was her name? Chelsea.
Chelsea Starda.
And I really like this one. When I first watched it, I was super annoyed with the protagonist for the first, 20, 30 minutes of the movie?
Yes. I mean, most of the film.
Until Judy comes in.
Let's talk about her. Haley Griffith is her name. She stars as the lead character, Sam Craft. And she does start being very unlikable. So
just very naive and almost like backward. And you realize, you figure out later why. And there is a good reason why that makes you empathize with her more. But at the beginning, she's the kind of naive that it is annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first scene we see her in, we're watching a video on her phone of her singing this original song.
That's very, very childlike, about koala bears and
kangaroos
and bunnies and...
Yeah, all sorts of things.
Yeah. Very wholesome, very pure. She is so pure.
And then we find out that we're watching it on her phone while she's showing two of her coworkers, so they're pizza delivery drivers.
Mm-hmm. And they're a couple of guys who are a little more hardened. They make fun of her. One of them is just a minor character, but the other one is a huge asshole.
Oh, yeah, and his mustache. Gross. You can tell he is an asshole from a mile away.
Oh, my God, that mustache, so gross. And he's like 45, but he's got a beanie and like a jean jacket.
Oh yeah, he's trying to be cool.
He's trying so hard. It reminds me of some of the people in this town. I like the opening of the movie, though. We talked about it where you just see through who we find out is the mom's eyes. And it's very, like, Jason.
Yeah, it looks like you're looking through the eyes of Mrs. Voorhees.
For sure. Except she's,
except it's Rebecca Romijn.
Exactly. Way prettier.
Yeah, so Rebecca Romijn, she's been in a few things.
Yeah, the cast is her and Jerry O'Connell.
Real-life husband and wife.
Exactly. But he's in it for just a minute, really.
Yeah, he plays Danica, who is the leader of the Satanists, also Rebecca Romijn. He plays her husband, both in real life and on the movie.
It's perfect.
So, yeah, so she's a pizza delivery driver, and then she gets call to, well, she gets a lot of calls that we see, and it looks terrible to be a pizza delivery driver. She's getting calls and having to help a guy move in. A woman propositions her to pee on some guy's face.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, she was gonna give her $12, though. If you really need gas, if you had to piss anyway.
I mean, is it worth it?
I guess it depends on who you are. Clearly, it'd be worth it to me.
I'm not so sure.
And then finally, she makes it to Mill Basin, which is this, like, secluded kind of gated... It's a gated community, is what it is. It's, like, super richy people. And, of course, like most classic horror movies, as soon as she rides in, there's a little girl waving in this pure white dress, just waving at her ominously, and the only way it could have been more classic is if there were two of them. Twins.
So she gets there, and she delivers the pizza, and the guy stiffs her for a tip, and she goes back, and she tries to get on her Vespa, and it won't start. So then she's real... Oh, also true. And then she's, you know, real upset, and goes back, and she's gonna demand for a tip. But what does she... What does she find?
Satanist.
The Satanist party's going on.
And she's so naive that as soon as she walks in, any normal person would be like, we need to get out of here immediately. And nobody even notices her. So she easily could have. But no.
She has a full-on conversation with one of the Satanists about, hey, have you seen the guy with the mustache?
She says the dead-eyed guy with the mustache or whatever. First of all, don't expect a dead-eyed string bean to tip you, just for future reference.
Oh yeah, he does not look like a tipper.
It's just from then on, it's she's naive, and she's getting she's inadvertently surviving.
Oh yeah, throughout the whole thing. So after she kind of makes herself known to the Satanist. And gets herself caught, right? They lock her up with Jerry O'Connell's characters.
Mm-hmm. Knock her out, lock her up.
And so they're talking or whatever, and he explains to her, like, they're Satanists. They're going to kill both of us.
And she still don't believe him.
And she still doesn't believe him, and he's telling her about how they need a virgin. And she's like, I'm not... Like, she's just blowing him off. Like, she thinks he's crazy.
She's like, that's a personal question. A total virgin thing to say.
He gets naked and then proceeds to try to have sex with her to save her because they need a virgin.
It's a little dark.
But can we just talk about Jerry O'Connell saying premium kush?
Say premium kush. That was pretty funny.
And then it gets even crazier. We have a Tiger King cameo here. Jerry O'Connell pulls out a gun and Travis Maldonado's himself.
Yeah, right in the neck. Because he isn't a gun person. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he's a feminist. When he yells at her and he says, why'd you make me do that? I'm a feminist! Oh my gosh.
So then she makes her escape. She actually does get out. And the Satanists find Mr. O'Connell laying on the floor, bleeding out.
Where has Jerry O'Connell been, though? Like, in real life? What is he doing? Just being married to Rebecca?
I loved him in Scream 2, playing Sidney Campbell's boyfriend.
Oh, I loved when he him got in that up, show Crossing Jordan.
Oh, that was a good show.
That was a great show.
When he got up on the tables in Scream 2 and sang David Cassidy.
You would love a David Cassidy cameo. I couldn't tell you. I'm not 62 years old.
Oh, stop it. Oh. It was so good. And so then, anyway, you were saying she's surviving circumstantially. It's basically luck at this
yes,
point.
Yes, it's luck. And then she... It reminds me of, like I said, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Like the kids who accidentally keep getting themselves killed. And Tucker and Dale are just there like, what the hell is happening? Just how do you keep killing yourself? And it's kind of the opposite. How does she keep surviving in the most ridiculous scenarios? Where she runs away to, she runs, of course, to the next house in the same neighborhood where all the Satanists are, and knocks on the door, and it's a girl babysitting her brothers, you assume, and she's just as creepy as the Satanists are. Super weird right off the bat.
She says, "That's bonkers."
That's bonkers! And then, the best part, the Kildo. Let's just cut to it. We don't need to tell every mouse that went across the floor. The Kildo. Explicit content. It is a drill. I don't even know how to describe it. Drill type.
Okay, it looks exactly like the fucking drill-headed puppet from Puppet Masters. Only attached to your crotch.
Which makes sense, because this is Fangoria. It was probably the same prop. They pulled it out of the warehouse.
And I do just want to point out, the only other Kildo in pop culture that I can think of is from Seven. The Lust murder, the man had to strap a Kildo to himself and fuck the prostitute to death.
Yes. Explicit. Explicit content warning. How big was that one?
Oh, it wasn't nearly as big as this Kildo.
Because this is an industrial Kildo, guys.
Yeah, this is like a appliance.
This is an appliance for a professional kitchen. This is not for
you. Yeah, you need to check the energy guidebook. Well, anyway, and so she then Kildos her own sister, and Sam's able to free Judy, who is Danica's daughter.
Who we met in the very beginning.
She's losing her virginity so that she wouldn't be sacrificed to Baphomet.
Exactly.
But then her mom was like, oh, we're just going to kill you.
And these girls, I thought it was so funny, Steve and his wife's characters. The comedy in this movie is so well done. It's so funny. The where they're like, they were so excited. They talked me into letting it be their first kill. So now we're with Judy, and Judy actually knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she's like up on the witch stuff.
And she's a badass.
Oh, she immediately goes to the kitchen, grabs the salt, and starts spreading it.
Well, and she names off, I wrote them down, she names off all these creatures that it'll keep. Anything that walks or crawls, she says. Spirit dogs, slip skins, grind guts, the gray man, night hags. I need movies about these, Fangoria. What is a slip skin? What is a grind guts? I need to know. I need grind guts, Fangoria. The Haxan Cloak. This is another cool creature. It's like a creature thing, and that's another really cool thing, is some of the creatures in this movie are really cool. It's made from Jerry O'Connell's soul, which is another cool part. Rebecca Romijn reaches her arm fully in to Jerry O'Connell's body, okay, all the way down to where his soul is,
and
air
this
quotes.
Is from his bullet wound.
From his bullet wound, yes, exactly. But the funniest part is when she pulls her arm out, all the way out, and you see the ballistic gel prop Jerry O'Connell's head jiggle. I just thought that was funny. So the gore is really cool, and then the creature that comes from that soul is also really fun.
Speaking of gore, okay, so we get another reappearance of Mustache Man. He's called over to Danica's house.
Yes, because she gets Sam's phone.
Yes, then she calls him up and she's like, hey, come over.
And he thinks he's going to get some. I don't know why he would ever assume that about anything.
He walks in and this woman has got these two mounds of cocaine.
It is Scarface buried in, like, I can't imagine it. And then she gives him these two whopper bumps. Oh my god. And he's like, oh, I've never done cocaine before. Just enough to kill a horse.
I'll never take cocaine for the right one.
Okay.
He's
and
almost
then,
immediately
paralyzed. Immediately. He can't stand. He can't walk. And of course, why did she bring him over there? For some black magic witchcraft. She puts
vomiting up his entrails.
Yep, and she puts down some plastic because she can't ruin the carpet. She just got them shampooed.
And then right after that, she gets an ice pick lobotomy. Damn it, Kim.
And Kim, that's right, damn it, Kim. But I am so glad that that asshole dies.
Oh, yeah. He definitely... It was fine. He deserved it. But then we find out Danica actually survived the ice pick to the head.
Well, she's a great villain. She's just the perfect villain because she is literally... She's like a... She a daemon. A daemon. And so she's able to come back to life and get everybody back. She... Including her daughter and Sam... and Gypsy, she drowns her.
Oh, right.
She describes it, and Gypsy stands there. It's so cool. There's water pouring out of her mouth, and then there's water spewing out of her eyes before before she ends up falling to her death. But her final act of revenge is breaking the salt barrier.
Right. When she falls, so she falls down drowning, but she uses her hand to, like, move the salt that these Satanists had put out to, because Rebecca Romijn's character, Danica, says, we don't want any unexpected guests.
Exactly. And so after all the tomfoolery, the satanic tomfoolery, orgies and masks and whatnot, and an actual Baphomet demonish person lurking in the background, a lot of eyes... Couple of horns, very hairy, tall guy, and he goes around, he impregnates Sam.
Oh, and her belly grows quick. That thing balloons up.
Yes, it was upsetting.
Oh my gosh. It was really good, though. It looked really real.
It did look real. I don't know how they do that.
I don't either. It was like a freaking cake baking right before
it was. It was. The bun in the oven was done. and she's about to give birth to this thing.
Danica says, what does she say? Prepare her vile gate for his coming.
Yes.
Oh my god. Her vile gate. So then she's strapped back up and she's laying there and she's about to give birth. And she says the mantra she's been saying throughout this whole damn movie, two fuzzy bunnies.
And what happens? What comes out of her gooch? Two fuzzy bunnies. Everyone disappears. And this new demon comes into play. Who is it? The little girl that we meet at the beginning of coming into Mill Basin.
Yep. Foreshadowing and all that. All those literary devices.
Uh-huh. They got it down pat. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. So Samuzel says that she is a stronger, meaner demon than Baphomet.
Yeah. Yeah. He's stinky. And, people aren't supposed to worship Baphomet before her because that's against the rules. And when people break the rules, she gets poopy.
She gets poopy.
I love her. I love when she bites into the bunny and says, run. Because she gives Sam a chance. She says, you win, I'll kill you fast.
And then Sam rides off on her Vespa into the night. To Australia.
And hopefully there are less Satanists there, though what I've heard, it's not much better. Could be much worse. Have you heard of some of the serial killers that come out of there? Check it out. We become a serial killer podcast.
So that was Satanic Panic. Yes. Overall, I would say good film, what, 7 out of 10?
I'd give it an 8 out of 10. I really liked it. It did have some good gore. Could have been a little more gory for me.
Yeah, could have been a little less cheesy for me.
Really? I thought the cheese was fine. I thought it added to the comedy.
It was comedic. I guess I would have liked a little more scare.
Yeah, I would have liked a couple jump scenes.
The balance was off.
Yeah. But the comedy was great.
But let's shift gears a little bit and talk about two upcoming films this year. We mentioned both of them in our first episode last weekend. But I want to talk about Candyman. The original came out in 1992, and it wasn't, at the time, it wasn't regarded as like a really great film, but it's kind of become like this great cult classic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So this is Nia DaCosta. She's the directing. It's her third directing gig. The other things were kind of minor, but she seems really cool. She went to Tisch in New York City, and she studied 1970s film, like Scorsese and Spielberg.
Okay.
What's really exciting, and I mean, it's exciting to have a black woman of color director, but we love Jordan Peele, and he's got his hand in the cookie jar, too.
Is it screen? Did he write the screenplay, or?
He is producing it through Monkey Paw Productions.
Okay.
But he said that this is going to be, like, monumental in regard to black representation in horror.
Which, thanks to him, we've gotten some more of recently.
Right. Get Out, Us, and so...
Both amazing.
This is another one. So I'm glad that there's finally a place for people of color in horror.
Yes. Whether or not just the first one to die.
Yes, exactly. Or used as a token character.
Yes. I hate that.
It was originally set for release in June of this year, but it was pushed back to September amid the coronavirus shutdown. It's a direct sequel to the 1992 film of the same name. Yep, so they're continuing. And actually, the best part, Tony Todd, the original Candyman, is reprising his role.
Really?
Yes. How?
That is 30 years later? Is 1990?
Yeah, 1992. So nearly 30 years later, and he's pulling a Fred Krueger.
That's amazing. I did not realize that. So are they going to... Because in the first one, at the end, she becomes Candyman.
Oh, Helen Lyle.
She does, yeah.
So she is also back, but not the same actress. We're not getting Virginia Madsen. I forget who's playing this Helen Lyle, but she is back also as a vengeful spirit.
Very cool. Oh, I'm excited then.
And so Tony Todd, reprising his role, he has a huge filmography, and it's likely that if you haven't seen him in Candyman, you've definitely seen him in something else. He's been in other horror films like Night of the Living Dead, Wishmaster. He had a recurring role as the Undertaker in the Final Destination series. So, you may have seen him in the one with Ali Larter, the second one. But also, so not only is it taking place in Chicago, which has now been gentrified, the main character is Anthony McCoy, who is the infant that was kidnapped in the original, that was nearly killed by Candyman 30 years ago, but was saved by Helen Lyle. So he's the main character.
No shit. That is awesome.
He's being played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who was in Aquaman. He played Aquaman's nemesis, Black Manta.
Oh, I'm excited.
And he was in Jordan Peele's Us. He played Lupita Nyong'o's character's dad in the very beginning of the film.
Oh!
So I'm excited to see another collaboration between him and Peele.
Yes. Yes, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to that even more now. I just hope the theaters are open by then because I want to see it in theaters so bad. That big screen. Oh my gosh. Anyone else in the cast? Vanessa Williams is in this? The mom of the baby. The mom of Anthony.
So she is our protagonist.
I love it. And it's going to be brand new and... This is very exciting.
Special effects have come a long way.
Yes. We're going to get some good bees out the mouth scenes. Ooh, some good gore. The hook. Oh.
But now let's talk about...
The Conjuring 3.
The Conjuring. The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yes. And I did a little research on that one. It is being directed by Michael Chaves? I don't know. It's Chaves. Chaves or Chaves. I'm not sure. But he also directed The Curse of La Llorona that we watched recently. It was really good. And it has some of those James Wan shots we talked about. The over the head when the camera flips. And yeah, it's... So he's going to direct... David Leslie Johnson wrote the screenplay. He also did the screenplays for Conjuring 2 and Orphan, if you remember that movie.
So we've got a good group of guys.
I think so, and James Wan is back producing, so it should fit in. And I know you already know the story that this is based on, but I read a little more into it. It's going to be based on the trial of Arnie Cheyenne Johnson, also known as the Devil Made Me Do It case, in which the defense sought to prove innocence based upon the defendant's claim of demonic possession and denial of personal responsibility for the crime.
And so this is based on a true story.
This is a true story. This happened. This was unprecedented in the U.S. courts.
And what year was this?
80? 19...
Because I know Ed and Lorraine Warren had their hand in this.
They did. They absolutely did in real life. And so the story is, there's a little boy, 11 years old, and he's possessed, has several possessions in him, according to Ed and Lorraine Warren, and according to several priests who also were there and checked him out and did all the things, and they were like, yes, we need to get the church in here. So they were approved by the Vatican to do 3 lesser exorcisms. So it's like in stages, I'm pretty sure is how they do it. And during one of these exorcisms, I'm not sure how, this is the one thing I haven't been able to find yet, how Arnie Johnson was there. But he was there and apparently was egging on the demon, and it jumped into him. And then sometime later, when he was married, him and his wife moved into a place, and he ended up stabbing, I think. He ended up murdering his landlord, Alan Bono. And then they convicted him for it. For first-degree manslaughter, and because the judge said there's no proof, there's nothing that you can put on paper that shows me that you're innocent, so, so he was convicted. He only served 5 years of a 10 to 20 year sentence.
For basically murder?
For straight-up murder. According to him, he's never done anything since, and he does believe he was possessed. They all believe it was true still. Apparently, I've read some things that say that the Glatz family, the little boy who was possessed originally, they deny it all, but Arnie doesn't. I mean, why wouldn't he? He went to court. So he says that, and his wife is on his side too. They say that they just are lying for monetary gain. They keep trying to sue these books and these TV movies, because this isn't the first movie to be made about this. There have been books, TV movies, and the family has tried to sue those things for money, for either it not being told correctly or whatever reasons. There's a story to tell. They say that they took advantage of some people are claiming that David had mental illness, the little boy who was possessed originally, and so it wasn't a possession, it was a mental illness. And yeah, so there's, of course, with these things, you don't know the truth. Nobody knows the truth except, you know, those people. So but it'll make for a great movie, I think. I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, that's another thing to look forward to. And let me see if they have a release date set. It's saying September 11th, 2020. So hopefully we'll be getting that and Candyman this September. September, October, spooky season, getting off to a good start.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to Peaches and Screams.
If you have any questions or suggestions, contact us at peachesandscreamspod@gmail.com.
We're your horror hosts. I'm Haley Jo.
And I'm Coco.
Sweet Screams.